Jay Mariotti here, and this was thuggery at its ugliest, a 3 to 5 year prison sentence if it happened on the street. The last event this country needed, with racial strife and political tension oozing from America's weary pores, was the sight of Myles Garrett, the elite defensive end of the Cleveland Browns, ripping the helmet off the head of Mason Rudolph, quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and beating Rudolph over the head with that helmet. Somehow, Rudolph is okay, but if the helmet, swung with that kind of force, had struck him in the face or in the eye, it could have ended Rudolph's career. It sparked a wicked brawl at the end of the game that was unlike anything I've seen on a football field, filled with kicking and punching and three ejections, including the Steelers' Marquise Pouncey attacking and kicking Garrett as all hell broke loose in Cleveland. That was a scene that made death sports such as UFC and boxing seem civilized by comparison. Garrett is now disgraced as a madman, and it framed the Browns, who had just won the game and actually were turning around their season, as a team out of control, with Baker Mayfield picking fights recently with fans and reporters, Odell Beckham Jr. having words Thursday night with Steelers coach Mike Tomlin, and Browns coach Freddie Kitchens acting like a clueless bumpkin through it all. Garrett should be punished with a suspension for the rest of the season and at least 6 games next season. Yep. And when even Mayfield says Garrett's actions were unacceptable, you know this was a dark moment for the Browns and the NFL. Here was Garrett trying to explain his actions.
Made a mistake. I lost my cool. And, I regret it. It's going to come back to hurt our team. The guys who jumped into the little scrum, I appreciate my team having my back, but it just never got to that point. That's on me.
How tough is it for you guys to play the game, kind of game you did, and then to have it all seem to be overshadowed by that play?
A win's a win. I don't think it's overshadowed by what happens in 8 seconds.
And here was Rudolph speaking the truth.
I don't know what the rules are. I don't know, but I know it's Bush League. I know he's, total coward move on his part. It's okay though. I'll take it. I'm not going to back down from any bully out there. So we'll see what happens. I don't know.
And shame on ESPN reporter Josina Anderson for recklessly tweeting, and I'm quoting, "I would bet Myles Garrett will say he heard Mason Rudolph call him something egregious," end quote. That is not what happened here, and Anderson immediately deleted the tweet, all of which was utter madness here in a nation that becomes more unhinged by the day.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
And rather than let a sleeping Colin Kaepernick lie, the NFL has foolishly created yet another public relations crisis. It's obvious Roger Goodell and the owners have an agenda in setting up a hasty league-wide tryout for the acclaimed activist with a heads-up of only 4 days, which strikes me as either a room full of attorneys trying to avoid a second collusion suit from Kaepernick, or a commissioner who wants the world to know that franchises have chosen not to sign him and not the league by way of a blackball. That said, even if contrived, this is a chance for Kaepernick to either prove he's worthy of a roster spot on one of 32 teams, or to finally just shut up and go away already. Because if he still has a rocket arm and he's still in football shape and he still has the desire to play, a desire, by the way, that waned a few years ago, then somebody will sign him. Here's what's lost in the aftermath of a sideline kneeling campaign that was proud, powerful, and a substantial moment in American history. Kaepernick is still an erratic, fair to middling quarterback who hasn't played in three seasons and likely is not worth the residual headaches and commotion. Yet the NFL, which doesn't have to do it, is giving him a special private workout session anyway, Saturday in Atlanta. The optics are bad, only feeding the theory it's a PR stunt, a scam, and a setup, with NFL general managers and head coaches too busy with their own teams on a game weekend to suddenly dash off and see Kaepernick. Meanwhile, the league is refusing to even list who's showing up from those teams. No, Goodell said when Kaepernick's people asked for that list. But Kaepernick is no saint either. He's the one who sued the league for collusion. He's the one who referred to Goodell and the owners as racists. They don't have to do him any favors here. It's also clear the league is trying to help its franchises in this case, creating a league-wide platform that shields teams from local backlash if they were to bring in Kaepernick for individual tryouts. So all of this is very messy in a very complex world. And who's to say Kaepernick also isn't involved in his own scheme here, not really wanting to play football, but using his NFL jobless status to keep perpetuating himself as a social martyr and lightning rod. Whatever is happening here, the NFL is giving him an unprecedented stage. And if, as he says, he has been in football shape and working out religiously for 3 years, then he should be ready, even if the circumstances are murky. And if no team signs him, please stop saying he has been blackballed as if he's some sort of Hall of Fame quarterback when smart football people realize he hasn't been all that since, what, 2013? Sometimes the big leagues simply don't want you anymore for a variety of reasons, which is why the XFL would be the perfect landing spot for the activist who can't throw straight. As we've seen through time, NFL owners will sell their souls and take guys right off the street or out of prison to win football games. Look at Josh Gordon, who is on his, what, seventh chance with his third team, Seattle, which immediately targeted him in big moments in that Monday night victory and evidently will deal with his ongoing substance abuse issues. But the big issue with Colin Kaepernick is this. Where is his head right now? So I'm going to tell the story again. I've told it on this podcast many times. When I worked in San Francisco as an editor and a columnist in 2015, I covered Kaepernick in what might have been the worst quarterbacking season I have ever seen. And remember, I worked in Chicago, the city of weak shoulders, where quarterbacks go to die, for 17 years. I also was among a small group of reporters who heard Kaepernick say, in a totally unsolicited comment on a summer morning, that he didn't care if he had football in his life anymore. An obvious precursor, when you look at it, to the kneeling campaign that started a season later. So after all these years of strong activism, having become a historically important social symbol in his protest of racial injustice and police brutality, does Kaepernick truly have the spirit to play football again when he said, not that long ago, that he didn't care about football? If I'm an owner, a GM, or a coach, that's what I'm zeroing in on. Yeah, I need to see his arm and if he's in shape, but I want to know where his head is. Now, Kaepernick seems enthusiastic when he tweets, quote, I've been in shape and ready for this for 3 years. Can't wait to see the head coaches and GMs on Saturday. But is that real? Or is that a sarcastic jab at the fact the coaches and the GMs will not be there? And closer to the point, will he stop the sideline protests and the politics and simply stick to football when all other NFL players have stopped kneeling, including Michael Bennett, who has ceded to the strong directive of the influential Dallas owner Jerry Jones? I must say the timing is odd for the NFL in this sense. Why now? Why not last February before free agency and the draft when franchises are preparing their rosters? Apparently, the league is responding to an October statement by Kaepernick's reps, who said they've received, quote, little to no response, unquote, from the 32 teams. Eric Reid, Kaepernick's partner in kneeling with the 49ers, is among those who thinks this is a PR stunt by Roger Goodell.
It feels like the same play from the NFL. It feels disingenuous. They told Colin that he has an opportunity and that the league will send representatives from each team, but it's a Saturday before game. Teams are traveling on Saturdays. What head coach or GM is going to be able to make this trip? But as far as I know, Colin's going to be there and he's going to perform because I know he's right.
Wait a minute. Didn't Reid sign a $22 million deal with Carolina, disproving him as a victim of so-called NFL collusion? Of course, Kaepernick and his people conveniently ignore that there has been interest in him in the past. The Broncos were ready to bring him in, but football boss John Elway wasn't convinced Kaepernick wanted to play. And the Ravens, who obviously are much better off with superhero and MVP candidate Lamar Jackson, were interested until Kaepernick's girlfriend slash Svengali, New York DJ Nessa Diab, posted a racially insensitive caption over a photo of Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti posing with franchise great Ray Lewis, who was trying to arrange with Bisciotti for the Kaepernick signing in Baltimore. These are the issues that understandably worry NFL owners and execs. Will Kaepernick's signing inflame tensions in a community and or distract a locker room? With the season winding down, how many teams would really want to sign him anyway, teach him the offensive system, get him any sort of practice reps? I say nobody will sign him. Maybe they will in the offseason based on this workout, but not now. Teams with losing records don't want him. The Bengals are tanking for Joe Burrow. The Dolphins for Tua Tagovailoa. Denver, Elway wants to see rookie Drew Locke, his first-round pick, which is fair. The Bears, I guess it's a slight possibility in that Mitchell Trubisky is struggling and there are no sure quarterback fixes on the horizon for Chicago other than, I don't know, maybe Cam Newton in the offseason or Teddy Bridgewater in free agency. But doesn't Bears GM Ryan Pace, who has sabotaged his career by trading up the draft Trubisky number two in 2017 when he could have taken Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, oh, doesn't he want to continue monitoring Trubisky the rest of this season before declaring his creation a bust? Detroit might want him as Matthew Stafford deals with back issues, but here's another question. How does Kaepernick feel about being a backup? And how would he feel about making backup money? As for playoff caliber teams, Carolina, Eric Reid's team, makes some sense. Kaepernick and Christian McCaffrey, same backfield, as Newton is being phased out. While Reid claims the Panthers owner David Tepper is a Kaepernick fan. But again, he won't be a starter this season with Kyle Allen entrenched, enjoying some success. Pete Carroll was interested at one point, referring to Kaepernick as an NFL starter, yet the Seahawks are rolling behind another MVP candidate, Russell Wilson, with Geno Smith as the backup. Yeah, I could see a little bit of an upgrade from Geno Smith, but again, Kaepernick hasn't played in 3 years. So, is there a fit, legitimately? Did somebody say New England, where Tom Brady has only rookie Jarrett Stidham behind him? But think about this. Wouldn't Bill Belichick have contacted Kaepernick by now and conducted some sort of super secret workout if he wanted him? So it's likely Kaepernick will work out in Atlanta and go unsigned unless somebody signs him in the offseason, all of which will have the activists throughout America, throughout the world, in a lather that Goodell and the owners intentionally sabotaged him. They'll say the league caught Kaepernick and his reps by surprise, not informing them about the workout until Tuesday morning and giving him just a few days to prepare. And then they'll say the league was setting him up by having the workout on a Saturday and rejecting Kaepernick's request to have the workout the following Tuesday, when more GMs and coaches could have seen him on the league's off day. The counter argument to that: video of the workout and an interview with Kaepernick will be made available to all the teams immediately, And personnel directors and scouts for the franchise certainly can be in Atlanta. Look, I'm just happy this maddening story finally is coming to a head. If Colin Kaepernick can throw the ball accurately, run like a deer as he once did, and show up with the proper attitude about football and life, a team eventually will sign him. If not, he can't say he didn't have the chance, clumsy as that chance is. In the latest evidence that Major League Baseball is inept and woefully bereft of leadership, the sport's integrity now is under siege again with a rampant electronic sign-stealing scandal. And it centers, to no one's surprise, around the Houston Astros, a franchise that has inspired paranoia among opponents for years and is being accused of using extreme measures to cheat. This time, insiders are speaking out and putting their names to their whistleblowing, such as former Houston pitcher Mike Fiers, who says the Astros, during their World Series championship season in 2017, stole signs during home games with the aid of a camera positioned in the outfield at Minute Maid Park. And MLB, typically slow to the switch and needing a media report to react to this, finally is investigating, saying it will probe the 2017 Astros, the 2019 Astros, the 2018 champion Boston Red Sox, and other teams for these dishonest practices. And to think the Astros once were the sport's biggest feel-good story, rising from the dregs behind 5'5" Jose Altuve. Now, between this and an executive's rant at female reporters, followed by an attempt to smear one of those reporters as a liar, the Astros strike me as the New England Patriots of baseball cheaters. How did this sign-stealing operation work? As reported by the Athletic website, the camera fed live images of the opposing catcher's signs to a TV monitor in the tunnel behind the Astros dugout. When a sign was decoded, such as a breaking ball or an off-speed pitch being on the way, a player or a team employee would bang on a trash can in that tunnel, which could be heard by the hitter in the batter's box. I even checked this out, clearly. Just go to the web, you'll find it. You can hear the banging in this 2017 audio clip with Evan Gattis at the plate against the Chicago White Sox. Listen closely.
And misses outside. It's 1-1.
Why are the Astros announcers laughing? Are they in on the scam? Did everybody know? The bullpen catcher was helping too, relaying in signs for specific batters. Now, if all of this is true, and it certainly looks true, and the Astros have not denied it, saying only that they are investigating right, that's a lame way of acknowledging it's true, then I happen to think that at least the 2017 World Series title should be affixed with an asterisk, while MLB also should hit them with harsher penalties such as lost draft picks and huge fines. And if this happened to be in every game practice, how about vacating the World Series title, as we've seen in college sports? Because this is cheating in the same way that steroids users were cheating, and why Henry Aaron, in my mind, remains the true home run champion, not Barry Bonds. And the Astros are not alone. Several teams, Red Sox included, using technology to steal signs, which has been rumored for years. The so-called commissioner, Rob Manfred, said in a statement that MLB issued a revised policy on sign stealing before this past season, intended to, quote, provide comfort to clubs that other clubs were not using video during games to decode and steal signs, end quote. Why didn't we hear anything about this? Obviously, Manfred didn't work hard enough to investigate the 2017 claims about the Astros, maybe because he didn't want to know, and maybe because Manfred's office has been too busy juicing and de-juicing baseballs, sending home run totals to absurdly disproportionate record levels in recent seasons. On that note, by the way, Manfred was caught in a lie when, while claiming that MLB did not de-juice baseballs this past postseason, he said the postseason balls came from the same regular season batch. But an astrophysicist who writes for The Athletic about these ball issues purchased 36 postseason baseballs from Rawlings, the maker of MLB baseballs and a company partly owned by MLB, get it? And concluded in that article that those balls were not taken from a regular season batch. So Manfred lying. And furthermore, that MLB and Rawlings misled consumers by selling older balls as 2019 postseason balls. Yes, those balls available for purchase for fans on the web. So Manfred is as dirty as the Astros. Baseball stinking, rotten, dirty. Manfred should immediately call three men on the carpet, owner Jim Crane, the Astros owner, general manager Jeff Luhnow, and manager A.J. Hinch, the latter of whom obviously was hearing the trash can banging. He's standing right there, as did two of his coaches in recent seasons, Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, now the managers of the Boston Red Sox and New York Mets, respectively. Here was Jeff Luhnow playing dumb.
Were you aware of any of this, of these allegations going on at all? Just yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, specifically, I'm not going to get into exactly what I knew or anybody knew at this point. We're just going to have to wait and see what. I'm sure there will be an appropriate time to answer that question directly. I'm not trying to avoid it. I just think at this point we're going to investigate it and figure out what the facts are, and then we'll respond after that.
Are you concerned this is going to muddy the reputation of what has been the greatest success in the history of the franchise?
I hope it doesn't. We have a lot of good players. We have a really good manager. We've got a great fan base, and we've accomplished a lot. And I think that stands for itself. I'm hopeful that we'll find out exactly what happened, and we'll address it if there's something to be addressed, and we can move on. I mean, we've got the reason we won the World Series in 2017 is Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman and Justin Verlander, a lot of great players, and they do things the right way, and we as an organization, that's what we aspire to do as well.
Apparently, Manfred first will interrogate Brandon Taubman, the deposed assistant GM, to see what he knows about all of this. Taubman was fired last month for inappropriate comments and conduct toward three female reporters, and who knows what he might say about the sign stealing as a bitter ex-Astro employee. It might be too late to save baseball, which continues to fade in the American culture and is careening toward a 2021 labor impasse, but any rescue mission must start with baseball being transparent about the very strong perception that the sport is filled with cheating. I want to know which teams are cheating, how many are cheating, how they're doing it, and why Major League Baseball is unequipped to catch the cheaters. And if this has been a years-long cover-up, it's time for a new commissioner. I think it's time for a new commissioner anyway, because there is no commissioner. All this guy is going to do, Rob Manfred, is run the sport into the ground permanently. And has any sports franchise sunk as far in the last 4 years as the San Francisco Giants? To replace the Hall of Fame manager Bruce Bochy, baseball boss Farhan Zaidi hired Gabe Kapler. The Gabe Kapler who failed in Philadelphia and almost caused a player mutiny in his first season. The Gabe Kapler who, while working under Zaidi with the Dodgers in 2015, poorly handled allegations of sexual assault on two women involving Dodgers minor league players. The Gabe Kapler who provides tips on his personal blog for tanning one's testicles and also masturbation, writing, quote, that coconut oil is the world's greatest lubricant? Yep, that Gabe Kapler. This is not the way you want to open a new era in San Francisco. They're losing fans. The ballpark isn't sold out anymore. You've got, in the opening statements, the boss and his new manager having to speak about a sexual assault investigation. That's not how you start a new era. First, we have Zaidi audio, then Kapler.
I want to touch on the incidents in L.A. that have been out there in the public sphere and talked about over the last couple of weeks. I was obviously there at the time, and I just want to state a couple of things for the record. What we talk about here, Gabe does have sort of supporting documentation for, and these are things that were corroborated by MLB's investigation, which was part of the process. You know, number one, Gabe never tried to hide anything. The incidents that happened, he reported up the chain of command within baseball operations. The baseball operations group referred him to legal counsel in L.A., and everything we did from that point forward was done collectively as an organization. Secondly, in those cases, I think it's important to note that, again, as an organization and, you know, in concert with legal counsel, we did approach the victims and ask about reporting these incidents to the police. And we respected the victims' wishes with whatever they decided to do in that case. But I just feel very strongly about stating that there was never an attempt to cover anything up.
I think if I could go back and do some of the Dodgers stuff different, I probably would have called my mom and asked her a few more questions about which steps to take. And to Farhan's point, figuring out ways to support even better. And I think this is the right time to say that I'm sorry that I didn't make all the right moves. Everything that I did, I acted on from a place of goodness and from my heart and wanting to do the right thing, but I was naive. I was in over my skis and trying to do things on my own when it was very clear that I needed counsel.
And baseball isn't helping itself when the Red Sox and Cubs franchises that print money are looking to trade star players and cut salary as owners start gearing up for that labor impasse. With new analytics guru Chaim Bloom replacing old-school spender Dave Dombrowski, the Red Sox actually have put former MVP Mookie Betts in his projected $28 million salary on the block, along with, yep, J.D. Martinez, Chris Sale, David Price. And those howls are from New England fans used to championships, not payroll trims and tank jobs. I get trying to trade Chris Sale. Dombrowski never should have signed him. He got swept up in World Series fever. Sale was having arm problems a couple of years ago. Price has been a pain in the ass in Boston. Martinez is going to stick around the season, but he wants to stick around. He decided to not opt out, but the Red Sox want to trade him anyway. That means they don't want to win, and that's going to create a mutiny among fans. Here is Bloom, the newbie, setting the stage for a possible fan disturbance outside Fenway Park.
Yeah, it does, you know, add certainly a layer that kind of looms over some of the conversations. But I think the main thing to establish is just an open door and establish honesty and transparency as much as we possibly can and make sure that, you know, all our players understand that they don't have to walk on eggshells, that they can ask questions and we'll always be as straightforward with them as we can.
And the Cubs, who fired popular manager in 2016 miracle maker Joe Maddon, indeed are listening to offers on everybody, including young cornerstones Javi Baez and Chris Bryant. The Yankees, meanwhile, will be spending at last after harsh criticism for management's trade deadline dawdling. They need starting pitching desperately, and Brian Cashman says they will be pursuing Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, and Madison Bumgarner. I don't think they get any of those three unless they outbid everybody else substantially. Cole, Anaheim, Strasburg, Washington, Bumgarner, Atlanta. My predictions. Is this a lot of BS, keeping in mind that the Yankees haven't paid $200 million to a free agent since A-Rod in 2008? Now would be a fine time for baseball to change the narrative in the offseason and create instant excitement around free agency, which the NBA has turned into an unprecedented feeding frenzy that dominated the news cycle last summer and reduced MLB to an in-season afterthought. Super agent Scott Boras, who represents Cole Strasburg and Anthony Rendon, among others, bashed the owners the other day for too much tanking, but does hope for a faster-paced market than last offseason when his client Bryce Harper didn't sign with Philadelphia until March. I think Boras prepares his funny lines before he meets the media at the annual general managers meetings, such as this beauty about Cole.
Probably if this were Major League Christmas, we would be looking at 30 stockings that would clearly want a lump of coal. Absolutely. So he's a very, you know, pitching. I think starting pitching has hit the, you know, it's become back in vogue. It's aggressive market. There are, I don't think with Bryce that we had, you know, the clubs were always telling you that we're going to look into the trade market and then get back to you. And in these pitching free agent players and position players today, we're getting clubs that want to immediately come in and meet and have dialogue and move the process along much quicker.
Why Penny Hardaway thinks he can take down the NCAA, I have no idea. But the Memphis coach, who paid for the moving expenses for the family of star freshman James Wiseman before Hardaway took the job, has only sabotaged Wiseman's freshman season and jeopardized his status as the possible top pick in next summer's NBA draft. The university has backed down to the NCAA, declaring Wiseman ineligible and immediately applying for his reinstatement after Wiseman withdrew his lawsuit against the NCAA. And as I said on the last podcast, until the NCAA is taken down, rules are rules, and Hardaway, as a Memphis booster and program icon, should not be allowed to pay moving expenses for a family, even if it happened before he became the coach. Come on, we're not naive. If Hardaway pays moving expenses, then every coach should be allowed to pay moving expenses, and that would be anarchy. Here was Hardaway speaking to ESPN.
Well, we just have his back, and we feel like we're right. No, obviously, we're going to have our, if it was any kid, it'd be the same thing. It's just how we are.
Next Monday, you have another hearing with the NCAA. What are you expecting at that moment?
Well, obviously, I'm hoping that they continue to allow him to play. And that's what we're all hoping for here in Memphis.
Also, the Memphis East High School team is in danger of being stripped of its 2017-18 state title because Wiseman and another player were ruled ineligible last month by a Tennessee court judge. Who was the coach of that team? Oh, Penny Hardaway. And the most significant development of the college football season might be the NCAA's soft penalty for Ohio State's star defensive end, Chase Young. A likely top three pick in the 2020 NFL draft, Young was suspended for only one more game against lowly Rutgers before he returns for a difficult stretch that includes Penn State at home, at Michigan, a likely Big Ten title game against Minnesota, then a possible national semifinal and final. This could make the difference between the Buckeyes winning a national championship and falling short, and shame on the NCAA for not taking more seriously the loan he admitted to taking last year to fly his girlfriend to the Rose Bowl. Yes, petty, and he did repay it in full, but it's against the rules, just like the Wiseman situation, especially if it came from an agent, as reported, though Young claims it was from a family friend, although that friend might be an agent too. Ohio State got away with this because it played patty cake with the NCAA in order to land this easier penalty, sitting Young last week against Maryland, another patsy. And if the NCAA chooses to be lenient in this case, it had better be as lenient in similar cases at other programs and not appear to be doing Ohio State a favor. The nerve of Coach Ryan Day, who hasn't missed a beat as Urban Meyer's successor, to talk about adversity. He's just lucky Young missed only two puffy games. Yes, puffy.
Talked about it all week, and when the team was aware of the situation, they knew that this was the first time we had faced some adversity, and we know that there's more adversity coming along the way. We don't know where, we don't know when, but we talked to the team about that from early on, that we were going to equip ourselves to be ready for any adversity that might hit us. That's just the way these seasons go, and championship teams, they're resilient in times of adversity, and it reveals your character. And so, you know, the coaching staff, we relayed to the team and to the program that our character was at the forefront. You know, the heart of this team is being showcased today to find out what we're really made of. And I think they took that to heart, and you know, they played hard throughout the game.
LSU is the nation's number one team, according to the playoff selection committee. But if Ohio State runs the table, I think the Buckeyes would deserve the top seed, which is important to avoid Clemson if Dabo Swinney's team is number three. at the end of all of this. Ohio State would be 12-0 with a blockbuster resume, which right now includes a 42-point win over otherwise unbeaten Cincinnati and a 31-point victory over Wisconsin. The committee, as usual, is smitten by the SEC and right now has Alabama at number 5 when it could have been lower after the LSU loss. But without a division title in the SEC and with only one resume-building game left against number 13, Auburn, Nick Saban is out of luck, and hooray for that because we need new blood in January. I wish we'd get Clemson out of there, too. Nobody's going to beat Clemson. I'm still not convinced Oregon as a possible one-loss Pac-12 champion would leapfrog into the number 4 spot, but the committee likes the Pac-12 more than the Big 12, where Baylor has been unimpressive and going 9-0, but still might squeeze into the number 4 spot if it beats Oklahoma twice, including this Saturday in Waco, and remains undefeated. You know why the number 1 seed is so vital? Ohio State and LSU would much rather play Oregon or Baylor than Clemson. To the NBA, where Paul George made his debut with the Clippers, but not with Kawhi Leonard, who was managing his load again. Maybe I shouldn't describe it that way, but load management, that's what they call it. Despite George's 33 points, the Clippers lost to New Orleans and went 0-2 on their back-to-back. Doc Rivers is feeling the heat with his son Austin, the Houston guard, calling for the ejection of his father in that loss to the Rockets. Tweeted Austin, quote, "Welp, Thanksgiving is going to be weird," unquote. What people are missing about the Clippers is that injuries, real and imagined, could derail this team. Whether you like load management or not, Mark Cuban does like it. I don't, because it cheats the paying customers. Leonard evidently still has a knee tendon issue, while George is coming off two shoulder surgeries. The war between the Clippers and the Lakers here in LA, which has been accelerated by Clippers purchased billboards that mock the Lakers and their favored status in this region, likely will be decided by which team is healthier in the spring, with Anthony Davis right now nursing a rib injury that caused him to miss an easy home victory over Golden State. I don't mind it when a superstar misses a game against a bad team. I do mind when Leonard blows off an early showdown against the Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, because it's part of a back-to-back sequence. At some point, he's going to have to play back-to-backs. So right now, in terms of which superstar tandem is the NBA's best, Leonard, George are chasing Davis and LeBron James, with LeBron deserving significant credit for announcing before the season that AD is indeed the number one option for this team. In addition to making Space Jam in the offseason, did LeBron have a lobotomy? Just asking. And Carmelo Anthony is not dead yet. The Portland Trail Blazers off to a disappointing start and getting little scoring production from their forwards rescued the fading star from the scrap heap. The good news, Portland runs plenty of isolation, which is Anthony's forte. The bad news, he plays no defense. This will be his final NBA stop. Don't expect much. This is not a guaranteed contract. And slow down on the Brooklyn Nets takeover of New York, as Kyrie Irving has a shoulder problem that could be serious. No one has any idea how Kevin Durant will respond from his ruptured Achilles next season, so thoughts of the Nets suddenly contending are way premature. And we're at the point of the NFL season where I'm only picking games of major significance. New England at Philadelphia. Exposed by Lamar Jackson, the Patriots now must deal with Carson Wentz for the first time in this Super Bowl 52 rematch. Remember, that was the Nick Foles fairy tale game. The Eagles will try to keep Tom Brady off the field by controlling the clock, but the Patriots, I do believe, will force turnovers, and Brady will make enough big throws in that raucous environment. Patriots 26, Eagles 23. Houston at Baltimore, which means Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson, which is a football wet dream, right? expect Jackson to remain on a passing role against a leaky Texans secondary. You don't think Bill O'Brien is missing the pass rush of Jadeveon Clowney about now, right? Jackson's arm will open up the running game, and the Ravens will keep dazzling as the league's top offense. Ravens 30, Texans 26. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. How does Kansas, a dirty basketball program that might deserve the death penalty, suddenly land five-star shooting guard Bryce Thompson? You don't think Kansas is still paying players through Adidas, do you? Nothing shocks me. And how did scandal-ridden USC land Evan Mobley, the nation's top-ranked high school player? Well, it seems Coach Andy Enfield hired Mobley's father, Eric, as an assistant coach last season, which led to Evan's older brother, Isaiah, signing with the Trojans. No shame there whatsoever, USC. If college basketball is to survive its bribery scandals, it will need more Cinderella stories and moments. To that end, cheers to the Evansville Purple Aces and Coach Walter McCarty, the former Kentucky star, who upset the number one Wildcats in Lexington and were then congratulated via speakerphone by Charles Barkley. Here was a locker room scene that made me smile. And if Don Cherry wants a new job, he can have one in Russia. The HC Dynamo team in Moscow has offered Cherry a position as broadcast analyst, not caring, apparently, about the xenophobic comments about Canadian immigrants that led to Cherry's dismissal from Sportsnet in Canada. Quote, he can talk whatever he thinks, the team tweeted. Quote, we love old soldiers and we will make him a nice suit. End quote. I have a feeling Cherry wouldn't last a week before offending Russians.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Sometimes, as you know, I'm disgusted by the media business, and other times I'm just amused. Skip Bayless always has amused me, including back in the day when I kicked his ass in Chicago. We were competing columnists. Though Bayless refers to himself as a sports journalist, he's actually a cartoon character, proving it when he posted a video of himself tossing Ezekiel Elliott's jersey into the trash after the Cowboys lost to Minnesota. This prompted Elliott's mother to rip Bayless on social media, demanding that he stop wearing her son's jersey. Bayless, of course, used this opportunity to grab some attention on his lowly rated program on Fox Sports 1, saying, quote, even the players I love the most, I give no passes to when they play poorly, end quote. Skip, if you were a true professional and not a 68-year-old fanboy or whatever you are, you would not be wearing players' jerseys. But again, I can't take Skip seriously. I just laugh. By the way, have to do this. Self-indulging. The October ratings are out for ESPN's afternoon shows. The averages, here we go. SportsCenter, noon Eastern, 332,000. The Jump with Rachel Nichols, great show, 280,000. High Noon, kind of a disaster, 293,000. Highly Questionable, a goofball show, 369,000. My Old Show, Around the Horn, 449,000. And PTI with a whopping 745,000. Okay, this moment of self-indulgence. At the peak period of my 8-year run at Around the Horn, we were at 1 million viewers a day. I understand audiences in recent years are fragmented. That said, PTI has not lost that many viewers. Around the Horn has lost more than 500,000 viewers, more than half the audience. Just saying. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life. You can't.